This is ground control to Major Tom. Can you hear me, Major Tom?
I don't know the next song lyric.
That's fine.
I'm not a huge David Bowie person. I've listened to some of his songs for the year, but I guess I never really had the exposure.
I made the mistake, well, it wasn't a mistake, I had no choice, of being born too late to appreciate his 70s output and his 80s output, while very popular, in fact, the most popular stuff of his career, I think, was, you know, it was less, it's good, actually, it's very good, but it was less impressive, because it's just sort of like, I just think of, I always thought of David Bowie as that guy who had those songs that I danced to in seventh grade, right? Mm-hmm. And I lacked that perspective that, you know, and then later I found out, it's like, oh my God, he did that song and that song and that song and that song and that song, and those are all great. And none of those are none of those are China Girl. So, you know?
Yeah, I think for me, it's that I know a lot of people, I have a lot of friends who, you know, cite him as a major influence, but it was not, I guess I probably didn't even realize who he was probably until a teenager. I have a weird musical background, though. Like, that's just who I, like, my family did not listen to a lot of pop music, and I did not listen to a lot of pop music, so
even
I just
mine.
Didn't know.
But this is not a podcast about pop music. It's a podcast that is done in secret and sent to subscribers of Six Colors. That's what it is, I think.
That's what this is?
That's my understanding. That's what I was told by the higher-ups in the Six Colors Empire.
Those guys, the shadowy figures, the supreme leader Snoke,
yes, the world
of the secret.
Yeah, it's the world
Six Colors Enterprise.
The world security council. The ones that Nick Fury talks to in the Avengers.
It's important to take orders from shadowy figures.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, their whole setup is they step into a little box where they're backlit so that they could be a shadowy figure. It's hard being a shadowy figure. Again, this is not a podcast about shadowy figures either. Hey, Dan, you just got back from vacation. We didn't do a Six Color Secret podcast for a couple of weeks because you went a traveling.
I did. We could have done one while I was on vacation, but that might have been counterproductive.
It would have. Bad for you, and it would just make me sad to know that you were. I every now and then I would see some little sign from Dan being in Kauai, and I would be, or you were also at Waikiki for a little bit, and yeah. I just would be sad because I love Hawaii so much, and I want to go back. I always want to go back. And
we've got to go back.
I got to go back to the island.
Yep,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. So it was an interesting experience. This is my second time, and I was trying to cut back on sort of the whole technology. I mean, that's not true. Technology is probably not what I was trying to cut back on, but certainly the social networking.
Yeah.
Like, I did want to post some pictures. And I took a lot of pictures. But, you know, I think I would end up, I generally ended up reading Twitter or checking my mail when I had some downtime, you know, often waiting for a plane or just standing around waiting for, you know, a cup of tea or something like that. But mostly did not spend a lot of time on the internet, which was nice. And so now coming back and working on the internet full time is always a bit of an adjustment. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's all these people on the other side of this
people.
Connection. This is hello, people.
Yeah, it's I noticed that you did that, actually, and I thought that was good. I one of the great things about modern technology is that you no longer have to be out of touch, but the problem is that then you sort of get that feeling like I need to be in touch. And you know what? Most of us don't. Most of us don't. Most of us are not doctors or, you know, people who are like on call and have to be available. Hey, that was my dog.
Yeah, it sounded like a dog.
That was in fact a dog in the background. Hey, subscribers, I have a dog. She's a boxer. Her name is Evie, and she just shook in the background. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm not going to take that out because that's part of the excitement
part
that
of the
is
charm.
The secret podcast. So the point is, most of us can unplug and probably should unplug. And while, you know, if it's fun to be online and sending photos and stuff from your vacation, great. But we actually got a piece of feedback from somebody about Clockwise.
I was just thinking about this. Yes.
Where we talked about unplugging and New Year's resolutions of like trying to turn off some technology and get away from technology a little bit. And I think that this person, his feedback was essentially, wait a second, this is a technology podcast. You're the home team. You should always be rooting for technology, essentially. And my reply was, we're not propagandists for technology. I think, you know, being judicious in your use of technology is just as important in being a tech-savvy person as understanding the technology.
I think that, and I think that moreover, the interactions people have with technology is actually a really interesting intersection there, right? You know, talking about how we interact with technology, because technology is one of two things. I mean, for a lot of people, technology is something, you know, that I think fades into the background, right? It's a means to an end. It's a way of getting things done. And then we as technology writers and technology geeks and people who are enthusiasts about technology often bring it to the foreground, right? Where we're not just using this stuff to get done. We're actively digging into it and finding out ways to make it do new things and writing about it, right? And so, you know, as though, I mean, you know, people, everyone sitting around breathing air, but not a lot of people spend time like talking about like, but how can I really upgrade my air experience? And so I think that's a valid topic, is to talk about how people interact with technology. And that might include interacting with technology less in some ways, or at least making it a less prominent part of your life, not letting your life get taken over by that technology.
Did you hear my dog?
I did. I thought maybe your stomach was growling. It was hard to tell.
That's a noise that my dog provides.
That's convenient.
Where she snores.
You don't have
like
to make that noise yourself now. Nope. This is podcast gold right here.
This podcast has gone to the dogs. That's no. I mean, this is part of the point. Is, you know, life is a part of it. All right, now there's a lot of dog. honey. Okay. That was pretty funny. I'm not going to feed her. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, she is adorable. I'm surprised that she doesn't hang out with me more often out here, which is good for my podcasting probably. I don't know. We're not the home team. You know, we are interested in technology, but, you know, part of technology is misapplying it.
Yeah.
And knowing that you're misapplying it and being like, no, don't. We had this conversation on Clockwise today, in fact, about like smart light bulbs and things like that. And how, you know, at some point you're like, yeah, I could get an $80 smart light bulb, but if it doesn't do anything particularly useful, I should maybe just get an $8 light bulb.
Yeah, well, I find my girlfriend a useful barometer here, because I will get really enthused about those things, and she'll kind of give me one of those looks like, why can't you just walk over and turn on the lamp? I'm like, no, you don't understand. I can do it with my phone.
Yeah, or I can yell and it turns the light off.
Yeah, and that does not hold a lot of water for her.
No.
Even as someone who is I think she is enthusiastic about aspects of technology, but when I start to get down, that's how I know when I've gone too far down in the weeds. Is when I start really fixating in on things, and then, you know, you sort of take a step back and realize like, okay, well, I don't need that. I'm interested in it from a professional standpoint, but perhaps I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So yeah, especially in a one bedroom apartment, a lot of those smart home things don't make a lot of sense for me.
You do have multiple rooms. I mean, you do have
I do.
Like a living room and an office area and a kitchen and the bedroom. So you've got some stuff, but still it's not, and you don't own your house. So it's not like you can retrofitting
knocking down walls
things,
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, or putting in new wiring or stuff like that.
Right. And so I struggle to think about like, what are the aspects of this that would actually be more useful? You know, what are things that I could automate, or what are things that I have to deal with where, you know, technology could make this an easier or smoother experience. And I know there are things that I hadn't thought, you know, we talked a little bit about Canary. And I think that's one aspect, that's something that I've really actually liked adding into my house, which is this smart security camera. And that is because I do often go away for a weekend, or, you know, take a trip to Hawaii, for example. And so it's nice to know that there is, you know, I can keep an eye on the apartment and make sure that nothing bad is happening. I also like, actually, the one of the features I like about that is the temperature sensor. It's like, oh, I can make sure that my heat's not coming on. You know, if I had a Nest, I guess I wouldn't need that, or I could adjust that from remotely. But it was good to know. It's like, all right, I'm not just burning excess heat in January in Boston.
Yeah,
because that's expensive.
I do use that. I have used that where we've come home after like a holiday trip and turned on the heater before we get home, so it's warm. When we get
that's nice.
Get in the house. It's a little thing, but it's something. It's nice.
Well, I was thinking about other applications of the technology that I did use when I was on vacation. And I mentioned on the Clockwise that we recorded earlier today that my iPhone is my only camera for this trip. And I think it worked great for that. I took a lot of pictures, a few videos, some panoramas. And I also relied very heavily on the, you know, mapping and directions. That was a big part of this weekend, since we on Kauai, we had rented a car. And so to get from place to place, We ended up using some combinations of Google Maps and Apple Maps just to figure out how to get around. Yelp also was huge in just sort of like looking up places to eat and stuff like that. So that was kind of fun. And yeah, I mean, I think it was interesting to have that experience of, well, I'm in a totally different place. How does technology help me deal with, you know, being out of my usual comfort zone?
Mm-hmm.
And so those were a few of the things, which are not, you know, terribly novel things or exciting things if you're, you know, around your town, maybe. But for me being, you know, thousands of miles away, it was nice to be able to pop one of those apps open and not have to feel like a bumbling tourist.
Yeah, I mean, I'm relying on, first off, just having GPS connected maps in your pocket alone is amazing.
So
and then, yeah, you throw in something like Yelp. It helps a lot. And it's not the be all end all.
No,
when I go to Hawaii, we usually buy a guidebook because there's a really good series.
The Revealed Kauai. Yeah. That is highly recommended.
And that's got a lot of really good stuff in it. And yeah, they probably even have an ebook version of it or something, but it's like, it's kind of nice to have the book with you and it's always with you and you don't have to have it charged and you're using it for the week. And, it's got a lot of local knowledge that is good. So that I find that valuable, but yeah, it is nice to know where you are and you're on my find my friends list. So I also knew where you were.
That's good. You could have given me directions.
The envy daggers I was shooting your way last week. Oh my God.
Well, it's also interesting because it also lets you know when places where technology falls short, and something that I don't have to deal with a lot at home is battery life. Because I don't, you know,
go anywhere or do anything.
Right, exactly. I'm locked in my office 24/7. And, you know, being out and about and especially using things like maps, which drain a lot of power, I was really getting down into, you know, low percentages for my iPhone battery by the end of the day or so. And so I did carry an external battery with me. I didn't actually even end up using that much because although the battery would, you know, get really low, I found that a combination of using the low power mode in iOS 9 and just the fact that I think when it's amazing to me that though the battery drops as fast as it does, I never got to a point where I was like, oh, the phone's just dead. It always seems to me like, you know, it really, there's a lot of phones I felt like in the past, there's a lot of batteries where it's like, oh, you get down to 10% and then it basically just shuts off because it's really bad at figuring out how much battery life it actually has left.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like this is actually pretty conservative because I would get down to like 2-3% and it's like, everything's still going fine.
Yeah. I've been, that low power mode is just spectacular.
It's great.
And I suppose if you use it every day, you already know this, but a lot of times it comes up with travel that you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And it is just that moment where you think, and not, it'll warn you at 20% and 10%, but also just, I've had it where I've been at a conference and I've realized, oh, it's going to be a long day and I'm not going to get a chance to charge and I'm already at 50%, and I'll just flick it on at 50% and it's great. Because it will, it's amazing how much power it saves. And, you know, you might say, well, why don't they do that more all the time? And the answer is, you know, it's saving power by turning off things that make stuff like, oh, you know, when I check my email, it's already there waiting for me.
Yeah. When I reload Twitter, there's all my tweets.
It's already there. I don't have to wait. But it's doing that all in the background, and it costs energy. So you turn that off. And then when you go to mail, it says, okay, I'm going to connect and look for mail because it's not been allowed to do that. And that, you know, so it's balancing the experience of like the full-fledged power-hungry version that'll last, you know, 8 hours or whatever, 6 hours versus the low power one that will get you to 10 or 12 or whatever.
Yeah. And because my phone has become so much more critical for travel, I mean, not only for things like directions, but also, you know, when I'm heading off to the airport, it's got my boarding pass on it. So it's like, I really don't want my phone to die while I'm in line waiting to get on a plane because that would be super awkward.
I wonder if airlines have like iPhone chargers like behind the desk just in case.
That'd be smart. Yeah, that'd be super smart.
Yeah, although they can print a new boarding pass for you based on your ID, I suppose.
This is also true, but it is, no one wants to be that jerk who's standing there with the dead phone. And it's like when I think I mentioned on, I don't remember if it was on this podcast or one of the other ones, but so you can do your the wallet, I guess it's now called, works on your watch as well.
Yes.
which is great, except you can't actually, the most of the scanners that a lot of the airlines I fly anyways use are those like little ones that kind of look like a C-clamp.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like you can't stick your hand in there.
They're meant to like slide a phone or a piece of paper. Yeah. Under it, but you can't stick your hand in there.
No, don't try that, by the way. You'll get stuck. And then I remember the one time I tried that and I realized it wasn't going to work. And I sat there thinking like, well, I could take my watch off and put it in there. Well, that's really dumb.
Yeah.
Extra. that we're not quite there yet as far as that goes. Maybe when they switch to the next generation of all the boarding passes will be NFC in like 30 years because that's how slow the airline industry moves.
Maybe. Oh, I had one thing I wanted to mention for the subscribers. So New Year's Eve, I wrote an email to all the subscribers and thanked them all of you out there for subscribing to Six Colors. Really appreciate it. And I posted a preview of the story that ran last week, which was the 2015 Apple report card, where I asked about 50 people and I got 24 responses from Apple, various Apple media personalities, including Dan Morin. Thank you, Dan.
I think I have literally one quote in that entire article.
Yeah, well, I soft played you because I figured, you know, you're also
I get my time.
You get your time on Six Colors, right? But you did vote in it. I didn't actually even vote in it. I wanted to kind of have that one step removed from it. And the idea there was to have these people rate Apple in 2015 on a bunch of dimensions, hardware in general, software in general, product lines in particular, iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, and then also stuff like cloud services, developer relations, environmental and social impact, and HomeKit. So we did that, and the subscribers all got a preview of that on New Year's Eve. And I sent them a little version of my chart that was kind of squashed and stuff. But it was a nice preview. And I said, if you guys would want to take the survey, go ahead. And it's the same survey. It goes into the same form. And then I would follow up. And I'm planning to do a follow-up in the Six Colors magazine for January. So, which hopefully will be out sometime next week. That's the plan. But now that Dan is back, we can put the plan into action.
Wow.
But I'm planning on writing a piece about that. But what I found interesting that I'd like to share now is that though the scores were different, if you rank all of the categories from best score to worst score, the ranking between the 100 Six Color subscribers who took the survey after I posted it on New Year's Eve and the 24 Apple media personalities, the ranking, the order is exactly the same. So either we are controlling your minds. Ooh, it shows the power of the media to control your minds. Or the media personalities have got it. You know, they're thinking the way that everybody else is thinking.
Well, they're users too, right?
Exactly.
So we all come at this from a perspective of not just like what we're looking at to analyze the company and its moves and strategies and all that, but also just people who use all these products.
So when somebody says, what do you mean the Apple Watch scored the lowest of all the Apple product categories? You know, the answer is... maybe the media personalities have no idea what they're talking about. Maybe the answer is, no, that seems about right. I mean, because now we've got this group of people who are, you know, obviously really into this stuff because they're a member, they're subscribers to Six Colors. But still, it's not, it's not people who do this for a living. It's also people who are just regular people who love this stuff. And, you know, the scores were higher generally, except for HomeKit. Where the score was the same, 2.1 on a five-star scale, but the rest of them, the scores were higher, but in the same order. So you know, the pundits gave the iPhone a 4.2 out of 5, and the subscribers gave it a 4.5, and the pundits gave the Apple Watch a 3 out of 5, and the subscribers gave it a 3.4 out of 5, but it was all pretty much in the ballpark, and that I found that really interesting. So there'll be much more detail on this, along with some verbatim comments that people left in the forum. I'm going to do another version of that same article, except this is going to be about the 100 people who took the survey. And I did put a link in that story for people who are not subscribers to take the survey, and I'm going to look at those results too and see how those differ. I'm not sure how many people took the survey, but we'll see. So yeah, so that's a kind of a fun one.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting looking forward into 2016, which we're now in, just to get an idea of where Apple's opportunities and attention might be going, I guess, as in the year ahead.
Yeah, I was surprised by how many comments were similar. You know, talking about the Apple Watch and saying that a lot of the people who took the survey say they still use it and they like it, but they don't use it as much as they had hoped they would. And that seems to be what everybody's saying. I still wear it every day and I love it, but I don't, you know, but that doesn't change the fact that the apps are really generally disappointing and they still take forever to launch and are not reliable. And I mean, all of that is true. So it's that mixed bag kind of thing. But does Apple put more stuff? Apple launched a lot of platforms in 2015. That also struck me, right? It's new Apple TV platform, new Apple Watch platform, and then the updates to the iPhone and the iPad and the Mac. Lots of attention on the iPad too. And so what happens in 2016? Do they launch more platforms? It seems unlikely.
Well, you know, we're getting an indication of that already, I think, in that we've seen the preview for iOS 9.3, which actually brings a lot of features to it rather than... A lot of times by now, Apple would be sort of radio silent as they were heads down working on the next major release. And so I wonder if that's an interesting choice on their part.
Yeah, people are saying, well, you know, what'll happen with iOS 10 at WWDC? And that's probably the most likely scenario. But what if
it's 9.5?
It's 9.5. Yeah. And they say that they're going to a more, they could easily say, look, we're going to go to a more progressive update plan where we're going to have 9.5 that we're going to ship in the summer, and we're going to tell you about it now, and it'll ship in the summer, it'll ship at the end of the summer, and then we'll have 9.6 that'll be sort of like a January release, and then we'll have a 9.7 that'll be a spring release. They could do that. They could totally do that. And you know, there's no reason now that everything is, other than bold new features that require developer access, there's no reason for them to just have the single like marketing release, because I'm not sure the marketing really matters. The big marketing is when there's new hardware and features that come along with the new hardware. On the software side, you know, they communicate with developers on the internet, and what's really interesting about the iOS 9.3 announcement is they used to do the old school thing, which is they put out a developer beta, all the websites write about it, Apple says nothing, and then Apple releases it and says, look at this new thing we did. And this time, that did not happen. The moment they gave it to developers, they put up a site saying, this is the new version that's coming. So basically, they got to announce it. And they've never done that before for something like this, a routine kind of developer beta. They just let the leaks go out there, and now they're controlling the story as if it's part of their plan, right? As this is maybe the new software process here. And then, you're right, the contents of 9.3, this is not like a bug fix update. I mean, there may be bug fixes in it, but there's like new stuff, including some stuff like logins for education that suggests that perhaps the next major release down the road of iOS, maybe it's iOS 10, is going to have multi-user support, which people have asked for like shared iPads with families and stuff like that.
Yeah, we discussed this a bit on this week's episode of The Rebound, which will go up, you know, in the next day or so. And I think, you know, their strategy in the past has always been like, well, if you got two kids, you want to buy them each an iPad, clearly, right? And, you know, this seems to be that clearly didn't pan out that well for if you look at the iPad sales. So maybe this is sort of an adaptation of saying, well, okay, we're getting more cases where families are sharing these devices, and maybe that makes more sense. We'll try this out in the classroom and see how that goes. I was mentioning on that show that I was a little disappointed that it's iPad only, if only because I know my cousin, who is an elementary school librarian, often gave her kids, handed out iPod Touches, so the kids could use that for like videos and making little, you know, taking pictures and making little videos and stuff like that. And that she got frustrated sometimes with the sort of one size fits all approach. But the iPod Touch is a kind of a languishing platform too, so I can understand why the iPad would be a more interesting place to do that. But it is an interesting move, and I think it's one that, you know, moves it even closer in some ways to being a quote-unquote full computer, if you want to call it that. So I think that's an interesting hint of what things may come down the road here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting to see the ways that Apple is sort of changing the playbook. And
I like that this is a new approach for them, because it also removes for us anyways, is, you know, that ambiguity of like, well, it's a new beta. Do you pay attention to it, or do you wait for Apple to release the whole thing? And, you know, having Apple at least sort of clear the decks and talk about stuff publicly is great for just, you know, okay, here we go. We've got, like, you know, we've got very clear-cut information about what's in this. And there are certainly other things that are in there that have made their way to the blogs from people who have poked around in the beta itself. And I think Apple has, in general, not really bothered, you know, getting annoyed about those anymore. But it's nice that they are trying to, you know, sort of put forth this story on their own rather than just, you know, possibly get huffy when other people report it in the first place.
Yeah. Okay, so next week, Six Colors Magazine, hopefully, and then hopefully we'll talk about the stuff that's in there. So we're working on that. I'm working behind the scenes to get... One of the challenges that I've discovered is that there's this... I don't have a place on the web right now where people can log in and get access, other than the Memberful dashboard with the file access. I don't have a web pages that are constrained by people who, you know, log in with your subscription ID and get access to, like, back issues of the Six Colors magazine, for example. And so we're working on that. We're working on we're going to set up, I think, a WordPress blog that is tied in with Memberful and do it that way. But we don't have it yet. So right now, essentially, if you haven't gotten the magazine yet, you can email me and I'll send it to you. But I'd like to improve that so that new subscribers get a link that says, here's where all the old issues are. And we don't have that yet. So we're working on stuff in the background. We're learning as we go, and it's a work in progress. Also thank you to everybody. I used to have a free sort of Jason Snell update list that was right when I left Macworld, before I even started Six Colors, and then it became the sort of Six Colors free update list. And on New Year's Eve, I also shut that down because that was costing me money to run that list, and I wasn't really using it. And now we've got the membership going instead, the subscriber list instead. So I want to thank people, because a lot of people actually, I don't know whether they didn't know or whether it was a prompt, but I sent an email out to that list saying, basically, I'm shutting it down. Thank you for being interested in this. And I mentioned we have subscriptions if you want to do that, and I'm going to focus on that from now on. And we got a bunch of new subscribers from that. So
hey,
welcome,
new subscribers.
Thanks to those people, because I turned that list off today and it's gone, and MailChimp is not going to charge me for it anymore. So, you know, it happens. Anyway, Dan, I feel like we've taken enough of these people's time for this week.
I'm good.
Maybe we should go back into the shadows and be shadowy figures again.
Shadowy figures once again, mm-hmm. advising Nick Fury on how to deal with the world.
All right, but until our next week, hopefully, and our next secret podcast. Thank you to Dan Morin. Thank you to my dog for also appearing, and thanks to everybody out there for subscribing. See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.